In Philippians 1:5, the Apostle Paul tells us how he looked upon the Philippians supporting him as he was in his missionary journeys. And it says, "For your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now." And what's amazing is fellowship, that word koinonia, is used for partnership, it's used for marriage, it's used for two people kind of like rowing together and doing something in koinonia. Basically, what Paul was saying is to all of the people in Philippi, they went with him everywhere he went. And what is wonderful is to see what the other end looks like. And Paul was writing back to them and telling them everything that God had done. This evening, all of the global partners are missionaries that we support, and all of the ministry that they do outward from us through our prayers and gifts is like a pipeline that goes out from Calvary of prayer support and financial support, but often we don't see the pipeline back of what all is happening there. And so since I'm here all the time, I have the privilege of showing you this evening some slides of everywhere that you all have sent us actually this year. We've been to 7 countries, about 120 individuals at various levels supported us and all that. In January, we were teaching the second year students at Word of Life. In February, we were doing the family conference down in Honduras. And in March, we were meeting with pastors in Florida. In April, we were in East Asia, and teaching. You'll see lots of those oriental pictures up there. And then onward from that, I went onward into meeting in Israel with the Messianic Jewish congregations. There are about 120 of them now. They're having the greatest moving of Messianic believers coming to Christ that has ever happened, and most of them are Russians. And so they contacted me because of having books in Russian and Arabic, both the same book. And all that I'm saying is that most of you don't see much of what's going on, except maybe through missionary reports now and then, but you don't actually see the faces of the people. So what we've done tonight is put the faces up on the screen. Almost everybody you see up there actually have received through the ministry of Calvary Bible Church, and almost every one of them have said, thank you. Thank you for coming at no cost to us. Thank you for serving. Thank you for giving. Thank you, like those little flash drives that you'll see on the screen. Those were paid, they were made in the media center here through Patrick Studebaker, the intern of communications, but they were all bought mostly by Calvary people. So what we're gonna do is I'm gonna pray for the offering. Dave Bartholomew will come up, and he is going to, during those slides, sing that classic song. But as he's singing that thank you song, think of those people that are looking down, saying thank you for your fellowship in the gospel, that you are ministering to me way off wherever they are. Let's bow together as we prepare for the offering. Father, I thank you tonight for the privilege just to see Katie playing the piano with great joy, using every gift that you've packaged into her life, and with her music teacher glorifying you, testifying of your goodness. And thank you for letting us sing your praises. And now thank you for letting Dave put words to the faces we see as they say thank you. Thank you from all of our global partners. Thank you from all of these recipients in the countries around the world. Thank you that we have the privilege of giving to you, Lord. We give to you tonight, we give our lives to you every day, and we offer our worship to you forever. In the name of Jesus, we thank you. Amen.
Dreamed I went to heaven, you were there with me. Walked upon the streets of gold, beside the crystal sea. Heard the angels singing, and someone called your name. I turned and saw this young man, he was smiling as he came. And he said, friend, you may not know me, teach my Sunday school when I was only 8. Every week you would say a prayer before the class would start. One day when you said that prayer, I asked Jesus in my heart. Missionary came to your church, his pictures made me cry. You didn't have much money, but you gave it anyway. Jesus took the gift you gave, and that's why I'm here today. Sacrifices made. I noticed on the earth, in heaven now proclaimed. I know up in heaven you're not supposed to cry, but I'm almost sure there were tears in your eyes as Jesus held your hand and you stood before the Lord. He said, my child, look around you, for great is your reward. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am a life that was changed. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am so glad you gave. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am the life that was changed. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I am so glad you gave. I am so glad you gave.
Thank you, Dave. Don't you all wish you could sing like that? If you take a moment in your Bibles with me to turn to Acts chapter 14, the last verse has probably one of my favorite missionary verses in the Bible. Usually we think of the missionary verses that tell us that we're supposed to go, but what is the missionary's responsibility when they come back? Well, basically it's the last verse of chapter 14 of the book of Acts. And it says this in Acts 14, 27. And when they had come and gathered the church together, and always remember that the New Testament form of missions, missionaries went out from and returned to local churches. The mission board deal that we have running today is kind of like a lot of other things. It's just kind of grown over the years. But originally it started out with a local church recognizing, qualifying, raising up, sending out, supporting, praying for, and then they came back. And there was a real accountability there. And so this is just seeing it in action. And when they had come and gathered the church together, now look at this. They, and it's interesting, it doesn't even talk about who the they are. I mean, it's so little on who these servants were. But what they say is what's so powerful. They reported, and here it is, all that God had done with them. I don't know if you remember months back, I said all of us basically are like edgers. Remember my edger leaning in my garage? My edger just leans there. In fact, when I left this afternoon to come over here, it was leaning. It was totally useless until I pick it up, I fill it with fuel, I ignite it, I guide it, and I use it. And by the way, I use my edger for everything, for edging, and I cut the shrubs with it, I do everything with it. It's really nice, kind of one thing does all. But as soon as I'm done using it, it goes back to leaning against the wall. Did you know they said we're spiritual edgers? And all of us need God to do something with us. And that's what we were talking about this morning. We just check in. And he's called each of us to do something differently. I can't use, the cutter of the honeycombs that I use in my hives. I can't use that to edge with, and I can't use the edger to do the honeycomb in the hives. Every tool is designed for a specific use for the one that's holding it. And God has designed each of us to hold us, to fuel us, to ignite us, and to do his work through us. And we shouldn't, my knife, the hot knife that cuts open the honeycomb, shouldn't be jealous of the edger. And the edger shouldn't be, you know what I mean? We're just what God made us for his glory. And look at the end of the verse, and he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. So they stayed there a long time with the disciples. Well, this evening, and I have just a little more than a half hour to do it, is to do what I call the amazing implications for the gospel in the largest human migration since World War II. You all know that you're witnessing that in the news right now. The largest upheaval and movement of humans. I know that China has displaced the rural people to the cities more than is going on now, but it's within China. And it's just been kind of moving the people around, putting them in high rises. This is unprecedented. In fact, probably in history, this may be the second largest demographic movement of people that we've ever experienced. But how do we pray for God's hand in the refugee crisis that's sweeping Europe and the Middle East? Basically, here's last Sunday's New York Times magazine. The displaced, the article said, nearly 60 million people are currently displaced from their homes because of war persecution. Half are children. And basically, they did a multimedia on those three people. Here is a New York Times picture of one of the countless boats that are coming from Turkey or from the area of Syria into the islands of Greece. And as you know, if you're watching the news, that there are just waves of people coming to Europe of these millions. And as they come, they're coming on ferry boats. These are the North Africans. I mean, they are just streaming from the war in Libya, from the war that's in South Morocco. They're just streaming in from everything that's going on with the ISIS fighting the fringes of Egypt. They're coming, the North Africans are coming by the millions. This is a picture of Syrians, Afghans, and Iraqis as they orderly follow the police walking through the Southeast European nations. I mean, haven't you seen these pictures? It just seeing from the air as they're walking between the fields by the thousands in these orderly little lines as they're being led to camps. They're all eternal faces or souls with faces. It's amazing to look at. Every one of these people you see here has probably nothing except what they're carrying. And they left behind their home, their savings, their job, their relatives, and they're just walking for their new life and benefits, they hope, in Europe. Basically, there are 19 Arab-speaking countries. You see them right here. They have about a third of a billion people, or a little more than a quarter of a billion people, 95% Muslim, 5% or 13 million Christians live in these areas. Now, by Christians, I don't mean us. I mean Armenian Orthodox, Assyrian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Copts, Abyssinian Orthodox, Roman Catholics, and a minuscule amount of evangelical Christians. But these are the 19 Arab-speaking countries, which I call the lost world. Basically, almost impenetrable to normal American missionaries. We just can't bebop and say, I'm going to El Jaya today, you know, and setting up shop and going to plant a church. It's just not really very easy to do that. Undercover, yes. But in the midst of this, and the reason I'm sharing this with you is that we as a church are sponsoring two outreaches into this area. One of them, the elders approved Thursday night. It's through our partners that are in Turkey. They're working with JETS graduates and they're working with displaced refugees that are in Turkey. The other one is that we're actually, as a church, sponsoring a gathering, and I'm going to show you the faces of the graduates of the seminary. And let me just introduce you to the seminary, because God has raised up an amazing gospel beacon in the Middle East. It's called JETS. It's the Jordanian Evangelical Theological Seminary. And it's a real place. There's the entry wall. I popped a picture. They have trained 625 pastors and evangelists. 100 on the average are enrolled every school year. They have 276 of the 625 that have graduated. They're serving in 21 countries. Now, there are only 19 Arab-speaking countries. They're only in 13 of the 19. So they're also in 8 other countries because they're realizing that one of the greatest ways to reach Arab-speaking Muslim people is when they're displaced from their home country, when they are spread and fanned out and desperate and looking for a job and trying to assimilate into a strange country. And there is a loving, genuine, friendly, helpful Arab-speaking person, they can almost tolerate the Christianity part as they find someone that they can communicate and will help them. And basically, JETS is now beginning to pump out more and more graduates to go into Southeast Europe, Central Europe, and soon Northern Europe, where all of these people are migrating to. And they've already been sending them, of course, here to America and other places. But these are Arab-speaking, born-again Christian pastors trained in Jordan. Again, the front wall of the seminary. This is a classroom. Seminary students, 100 of them today, sitting in, actually, this is kind of a clone of Dallas Theological Seminary. The fellow that I will introduce you to right there, Dr. Imad Shahada, was a medical student going to UC San Diego or UC La Jolla or somewhere down in California from a Palestinian family, went to San Diego And as he was studying, was intrigued by a student group that invited him in because he was all alone and from Palestine. And it happened to be Campus Crusade, and they happened to invite him in, and they fed him. And over the feeding, they began to share the gospel. And they led that young medical student to the Lord. And he now has given up his medical studies, and he is the founder and president of this seminary that's in Jordan. He went back to his own people and is sharing the gospel. And this is what in 1999, and it's a privilege for me to be on the board of this place because I've known him all these years. And he came to Tulsa back when I was pastoring there in the 90s, and he presented his dream. He said, I want to build, this was his drawing, I still have it. He said, I want to build this in Amman, Jordan. And he said that 16 years ago. And he says, I can see a place. Now, he had a place. He was already teaching them in rented apartments. He was teaching. He'd been teaching since 1995. For 4 years, he'd been teaching and training and graduating people. But he said, I want this facility. Well, by 2009, 10 years later, he'd gotten this far on it. And by 2012, it's getting bigger. And if you look on Google now, just type in Jordanian Evangelical Theological Seminary, it shows you right where it is in Amman. You know, a lot of people say, we should be careful. Well, it's on Google now, you know. I don't know how careful we can be now that we have Google. They actually have their address and their phone number, and Google even has pictures. I mean, this is what the buildings look like. Today is in June, and those two. But let me show you what's going on there. Inside is a full seminary library for these 100 pastors in training. I mean, I've walked all around there. You ought to see, half the books are in English, the other half are in Arabic. It's amazing. They are getting personal, hands-on training from Arab-speaking theologians and pastors right in that seminary. They have a complete faculty, and this is not kind of sit at your computer, which is fine, but this is actual personal, kind of like how I was trained back in the 70s. Every one of them are assigned into a local church. Every one of them have to prove themselves that they can operate in every dimension of the local church. They're out evangelizing, they're working with youth, then they're working with young people, then they're, you know, going with the older people, and they're doing hospital calls and communion, visitation, and everything else. They're all nurtured by veteran pastors. This is right on the campus, the students sitting with the constant flow of pastors. They have a full seminary curriculum. Isn't Arabic beautiful? I mean, it looks like calligraphy to me. It is amazing. They get master's level courses. In fact, every year when I get the invitation for what I'm supposed to teach, they go through and they have to check the material to make sure that it's up to the standards of their master's level courses because they're fully accredited. In fact, while I was typing the slides, I got an email from the president here. He says, I'm currently in Antalya, Turkey, participating in the ICETE conference, International Conference of Education of Theological or of Evangelical Theological Education, which is held every 5 years and comprises the 9 accrediting agencies of theological institutions across the world. So every 5 years, everybody that has an evangelical theological training center gathers. In other words, it's the leadership of the whole church portrayed here in a meeting of unprecedented size. And what's taking place is planning, networking, and praying. And basically what he said is, and what I'm going to show you tonight is that the displacement of the 60 million, primarily Muslim, primarily Arab-speaking people, 60 million, that's a fifth of the Arab-speaking world, are displaced through the fighting going on in Libya and the fighting that's spilling into Morocco and the fighting that's spilling across into Tunisia and the fighting that's spilling across into Egypt and the fighting that's going on in Sudan, north and south, that I'm sure you hear about all the time, and the fighting that's never stopped in Lebanon and the fighting that's going on in Syria that is just getting bigger and bigger, and what's been going on, as we Americans know, because we financed it in Iraq, and what's going on everywhere else, all around there, and now is spread into Turkey, has displaced a fifth of the 270 million people. And what they're saying is the way to reach Muslims is when they leave their hometown. Don't we know that here at Western? They will listen. They will ponder. They will consider. When they have the freedom to not be looking over their shoulder at who's watching and listening to them. And these men and some women, the women are in the counseling course and the men are in the pastoral evangelism course. But they have given the rest of their lives to gospel ministry, to their own people. And what they're saying is, we will either go back to where we came from, or we'll go to Southeastern Europe, or Central Europe, or Northern Europe, or we'll even go to America, since we have the first town in America that the entire city council is Islamic. It's the first time in our history as a nation. And they said, we will go to anywhere and where there are Arab-speaking people and give our lives to train. 625 have been trained, 276 have graduated. This is this year's graduating class. There have been 20 years of graduates. There's more of them. By the way, that's Imad, and that's his dear wife, Julia, right next to him, who helps in the seminary program. And again, here's Imad right there and all of the graduates around him. This was this year's graduation. Look at how, you know, those buildings, they don't look very finished, but they're using them anyway. And this is this year's graduation with the podium right there. And you can see it now. You probably can't see this, but it says, Christos en Hemein Elpis Heis Doxas, which means Christ in us, the hope of glory. And that's written in Greek, and that's on their prayer tower. And this is the graduating class, and they're, I mean, this is in Amman, Jordan. I mean, isn't that, I mean, don't you think, how come no one truck bombed them or something? Isn't that what runs through our minds? Every one of these Arab-speaking nations that has a Christian minority, part of the government's job is to protect the Christian minority. Jordan protects them. They actually have a campus, they have housing, they have hundreds of between the students, most of them are married, and most of them have kids, and there are all these people that work at the, it's like a little city in Amman, Jordan, pumping out graduates into the Arab-speaking world. This is IMAD conferring a degree this past May on a graduate who is gonna go back. I mean, these people, some of them are Assyrians. Did you know there are still Assyrians? Chaldeans, there are still Chaldeans. They live in the Chaldean region. It's still Chaldea, just like in Daniel's time. It's still Assyria, just like in the Bible times. All these places are still there. And these people live there. They live along the Tigris. They live along the Euphrates. They live in the Fertile Crescent. They live in biblical lands, and they have gotten saved. Some of them reach out in Jordan, because Jordan has over a million of the refugees concentrated in Amman, a million of the refugees that have come from Iraq and come down from Syria have moved. In fact, these churches hosted sessions to explain Christianity to the million refugees, and they filled these churches night after night after night, packed full, hundreds, men only, women only. IMAD went to the men only, and he spoke night after night explaining what Christianity is. His audience, he told me, some nights 300, 400, 500, 600. Almost all of them, seminary professors, doctors, lawyers, dentists, professionals, scientists. The people that are escaping from the conflict, most of them are the educated, wealthier ones. They have the means to escape, and they're leaving while you can leave. And they're coming, and they are sitting there saying, we don't understand why when we cross the border, we're given blankets by Christian relief organizations, Samaritan's Purse, et cetera, et cetera. They said, we don't understand. We, our country, Syria, if someone in Israel or in Jordan was fleeing across the border, there would not be Islamic society blanket givers at the border. Why are there Christian blanket givers? And Imad and his wife are happy to explain why in the name of Christ, they would do that. And this is one of the planted churches out from the seminary. This is one of the Sudanese churches. Many, through the huge conflict that's going on in Sudan, if you read about that and all the starvation and all the killing that's going on, the Sudanese are Arabic-speaking, you see the Arabic there, African believers that are getting trained in the seminary, starting churches in Amman with all the Sudanese refugees, and many of them going back to the Sudan to plant churches. It's fascinating to send someone, and this is in the JETS headquarters, they put push pins in every time a graduate starts a ministry, and you can see how it's spilled out from all the area around Jordan into the Gulf states and into many in Iraq and Syria. They actually have in Syria, up until 4 years ago, they had active graduates that did church planting through tent meetings. Tent meetings. They'd pull up on the outskirts of town. The imam says, you can't do that in town, but you can do it out of town. They set the tent up. The graduate preaches the gospel every night in the tent, and people come in to listen. And gradually people respond. And the Syrian evangelist I've met will stay 3 to 6 to 8 weeks preaching every night, and then organize into a local church those who have come to Christ. Can you believe that's going on today in Syria, in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Palestine, in the West Bank area of Israel, in Egypt, in Sudan, in Iraq? Unbelievably going on in Iraq. When you're losing everything. But now, when you see these pictures of the immigrants, the refugees, the migrants coming and walking like that, they're going to Europe. And the graduates of JETS are in 13 of the 19 Arabic countries. This is last year's graduation group. They are saying the greatest opportunity is where these migrants are, because they are going to be doled out. If you're reading the news, you know, I think every town in Germany is getting 100 of them, and they're just spreading them out all over the place. And these people are going to feel so isolated that they will gravitate toward other Arabic-speaking people. And that's where the graduates are going. They're following the river into Europe. JETS Ministry has 17 full-time resident faculty, 23 wonderful staff members that feed and take care of everybody, an almost complete campus. I showed you the pictures. They have 100 present students. They have planted 28 vibrant, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a few moments, local churches. I mean, if these guys are training to be pastors, before they launch them, they've got to see it work by the seminary. And so they are planting within all of the refugees local churches that are ethnically tied with whatever people group they're from. So there's an Abyssinian Orthodox church. And what that means is these are Abyssinians that are Orthodox but were never saved, that have come to Christ through a student who is saved, who's from that background, and they're just dotting. And it's really fun to go around Amman and visit these churches. I mean, it's like you feel like you're in a movie or something. The students, there are 100 students. They're from Iraq, from Jordan, from Sudan, from Kurdistan, from Egypt, from Syria, the West Bank, Lebanon, Turkey, Morocco, Tunisia, Yemen, the U.S., Europe, and the Far East. That's just the current students. Now, they have students from all 19 of the Arabic-speaking countries, but these are only the ones that they're currently having at the school this year. JETS is producing seasoned church planters and pastors that serve in the Middle East through all these upheavals. Now let me just, I've had the privilege being on the board. I interview students because I represent the Jordanian board. There's a U.S. division of it. And I'll just introduce you. This little tiny picture there is Ahmed. He's a youth pastor reaching out to the desperate young people of Jordan. Think about him and pray for his fruitfulness. He actually walks the malls of Amman, looking for the kids who hang out in the mall, who have nothing, who are refugees, who look with longing at all that American stuff and music and tennis shoes and everything else, and have no hope of a future. And he actually has started a youth ministry just in Amman, and that's his giftedness and his calling. He is a student. This guy was really neat. His name is Zoot right there. He told me about how he proposed to his wife-to-be. This is what he said. So I held the ring out to her and said, we may die in closed country. He felt called not to go back to his own people, but to go to one of the absolutely closed countries. And of course, he has a skill set that makes it possible. And so he held the ring out and said, we may die in that place. Do you still want to marry me? And of course, she said, yes. And of course, they're there. And see, one of the benefits for me, when you teach, you develop a relationship. I told you about one of my students sent me a note and said, I'm in Aleppo. I said, Aleppo, is there anything left of Aleppo? He says, mm-hmm. He said, I'm in our apartment building, but he said, just want you to pray. He said, I'm counting the seconds. You know how when we see a flash of lightning, you count, and every 6 seconds is a mile or whatever it is, you know, we do that. They do that the same when they see the flash of a barrel bomb that's dropped on the apartment complexes by Assad, the government forces. He said they know how many blocks away they're flattening apartment complexes. In Aleppo, the Syrian government is systematically flattening blocks of apartments because they're trying to drive the rebels out that are against the Assad government. It's this confused mess going on in Syria right now. And he said in his email, he said, I'm counting the seconds and from the flash to the boom. And he says, I figure that they're 6 to 8 blocks away, flattening. And so I sent back a note and I said, well, are you going to flee? And he sent back, flee to where? He said, ISIS is surrounding Aleppo. And you know what they do to everybody? They put them in cages and burn them, or they, you know, saw their heads off. He said, besides that, my apartment is the only place that the Christians know to meet. He said, so where would I flee to? And I thought, wow, that's a little different caliber than we have in America, isn't it? I mean, getting engaged to go to a place you might die and staying there as they're bombing the blocks of buildings around you, amazing. Dalid, older guy, graduate, he is working with MBBs. MBBs are Muslim background believers. Now, JETS does not work with MBBs. JETS is only allowed to be in existence if they work with Christians. That's Orthodox, Catholic, Abyssinian, Assyrian, Copts, whatever, Christians. By the way, when you're born, they tattoo a cross on you if you're a Christian. If your mom and dad are Christians, they tattoo a cross on your wrist. And therefore, when the police come to the seminary, they all go, we're okay to be here. But this guy is the specialist when the people in the seminary lead people to Christ. They go to him. And he has an entire church of MBBs, Muslim background believers. And he shepherds them, and they are going in. The stories I hear are unbelievable. Did you know in the mosque, when everyone gets down on the rug and they get down on their knees and they put their head on the floor and they get back up and they put their head on the floor and they get back up, do you think they just silently do that all through the service? You know what they told me? People are talking to each other in that. They're saying, what are you doing today? I don't know. What are you doing today? Do you want to come over to my house for tea? Yeah, I'd like you to come over for tea. What are you having? Well, we're having cookies. Okay, well, that's good. We'll come over. Hey, we just started reading a new book. What book did you start reading? Well, come to my house and I'll tell you about it. He said, they're just talking. I mean, not wildly and not, you know, raucously, but they're reaching out and they're actually evangelizing on a daily basis these displaced people and seeing, I'm mad, the president of the seminary said, they are seeing, and at this meeting he's at right now, of the gathering of all the evangelical seminaries of the world, they said they have never seen such a movement of God as been precipitated by the convulsions that America started in Kuwait and overthrowing Saddam and continued with everything we've done, and now we're moving to wherever we're moving to. And this war that's going on is displacing people, and it's causing people to respond in unprecedented level. This guy is Toot. I'll never forget interviewing him because he was wearing a wedding ring, with a stone, but there was no stone in it. It was empty. And I said, toot, you lost your stone. He said, I never had one. He said, I got a good deal on it. He said, bought it at the pawn shop. He said it was really cheap because the stone was missing. And he was proudly wearing it. He's from Sudan. He said, I'm lucky to have a ring. While I was interviewing, his wife was due to give birth to their son at any moment. Their child is born now, and he's trained. He wants to go back to Sudan. If you read the news, what an awful place to go. And he's a church planner, great one to pray for. Mugad, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his name. This guy is fascinating. He's an Islamic evangelist. He has led 11 Muslims to the Lord just this year. He knows the Quran forward and backward, and he knows the scriptures forward and backward. And he sits with them and just reasons with them. And they see the love of Christ. In fact, in the earlier, when Dave was singing, did you see that Chinese couple that got baptized here at Calvary that were on the screen? You know what they said? Those two, when they talked to me, they said, we never experienced love in our whole life. They're high up in the Communist Party. They're back there now. In fact, I just got a note that they're watching our stream services, 12-hour delay, in China. And they said it wasn't until we were at Calvary, or here in Kalamazoo, standing at Walmart, the buses had stopped, and they were standing at the bus stop, and a Calvary person pulled up and said, what are you doing? And they said, waiting for the bus. They said, there's no bus tonight. And they didn't trust them, and so they gave them a ride home. And they said, that expression of love was they said, we never felt that love from our parents, from our friends, from anyone, our whole life. We never saw self-sacrificing love till we came to America and met Christians. This guy is showing Islamic people with empty hearts the love of Christ. He's led one a month to the Lord this year. He wants to spend the rest of his life soul winning in Egypt. That's his goal. He says, I'm going to stay there till the Lord calls me home. He said, we're all going to die anyway. Why not die gloriously, right? Is that what you all think at night? We're going to die anyway. Let's die gloriously for the Lord. Samuel is an evangelist of the Assyrian Orthodox Church, AOC. That's what he was raised, got the tattoo. He's a Christian in Assyria, unsaved his whole life till he was led to the Lord. And he has personally, in Amman, led 60 other Abyssinian Orthodox to Christ, discipled them. He's formed 3 house churches in Amman, and now he's going to Baghdad because there's so many of them there. He said it's better to work with them there now that he's graduated. Wow. Stephen was saved reading a Russian New Testament on his base in the Iraqi army. He graduated and heads to Kurdistan this month. Kurdistan, Mosul, okay? Up there, Kirkuk, that whole area that's in the news all the time. He is getting married, and he started evangelizing in a 100% Muslim region. He is not afraid of prison or death for Christ's sake. Wow. You know, most of these kind of people we read about in books. You know, like we heard last week at the conference, you know, they're speared to death. These guys are still alive. And they actually, the love of Christ is constraining them to go. Amazing. Barnabas was saved in the Iraqi army weeks before the Gulf War. He met Stephen, the guy you just saw, at the door of their church in Iraq and discipled him. This guy was standing at the door of the church in Iraq, and this guy walked by that was reading a Russian New Testament. He was in the Iraqi army waiting to fight the Americans, and this guy pulled him in and discipled him. He's done with jets this month, and he returns to invade Iraq with the gospel. Can you believe he's actually going back to Iraq? Amazing. Joseph. This guy is amazing. I left him for last. I mean, look at that little shaver he's got there with his wife. Joseph has started just during his 3 years in Amman at the seminary. 7 Iraqi churches. Each of them has more than 100 people in them. He's a church planter. In 3 years, he's planted 7 churches. They now have 1,000 attending while he was a student doing his homework and everything, going to classes. Amazing. He just finished seminary. He's leaving for Baghdad this month. What will the Lord do there if he lives? You know, amazing to think about. question for us, what are we sending to heaven? I always quote this at funerals, but it's better if you quote it while we're still alive. Blessed are those who die in the Lord, their works follow them. What or who will follow you to heaven? What are we investing in for heaven's sake? You know, we're all investing in something, you know, our future and our retirement and finishing the house, our dream house. But what are we investing in for heaven's sake? Or for heaven's sake, what are we investing in? You know, there's a lot of ways you can say that. If we listen to the New Testament, it seems to say that what Christians, the operating system we should have is we earn what we can and we should be content with that and not always fighting and striking and demanding more. We earn what we can. We're the most contented good workers in the company. We live on what we need, not on what we want, but what we need, and we invest as much possible for the Lord. Because everything we invest on earth, not for the Lord, will be lost, 100%. See, that's the paradigm we have to keep thinking about. Earn what we can, live on what we need, and invest as much as possible for the Lord. And for some people, the greatest investment they have is not working three jobs, four shifts, 89 hours a week. If they just cut back their life to survive on 40 hours, they would be so much more open to serving the Lord. This notion that I've got to earn as much money as possible, no. Need less to live on. I mean, it's really simple math, you know, just don't have as many expenses. I was thinking of putting these guys as investment profiles, you know, if I was a Wall Street person. Stephen is from Chaldea. Actually, there's a province of Iraq called Chaldea. He's a proven evangelist, a proven discipler, a proven church planner. He did all that in seminary. He knows the language of the Chaldeans. He knows their culture, and he wants to stay until death. Wow. Do you know how much these guys live on? Do you know how much it costs for anybody to live in Iraq? Less than $500 a month. That's everything. Your apartment, your food, your gas. Wow. I mean, you want to retire somewhere strategic, retire to Iraq, you know? It's amazing to think about that. How about Samuel, the Assyrian? Proven evangelist, proven discipler, proven church planner, knows the language, willing to stay until death. I mean, these guys are doing it. Barnabas, the guy that led Stephen to the Lord, proven evangelist, proven discipler, proven church planner, knows the language. He's going till the Lord calls him home. How about this guy that started the seven churches, Joseph the Assyrian? Amazing. Okay, JET students right now in seminary live on $10 a day. That's food, housing, and tuition. By the way, you can't work when you're in Jordan. The Jordanian government says these guys are on visas and they're not taking the jobs of the Jordanians. That's the total cost to go to school and to eat and live and have an apartment, $10 a day. So I got a little creative at my desk. I put a dollar and a quarter. Look, this is how much it costs to feed one Arabic-speaking called and gifted evangelist and train him. Isn't that amazing to think about? Let's see, 255. That's one venti quad latte. Do you ever think about that? That's they call it Starbucks. It's actually $5 for a cup of coffee. There's five. The power of small gifts. See, this is amazing to think about. For one seven church planting student, $10 a day? I mean, I'm amazed, and I really got creative, but let's just get away from that. So let's talk before we introduce our new members, that Calvary has a two-part plan for 2016. Part one, in April of 2016, Bonnie and I are going to train Central Europeans that are working with the refugees in those camps. And these kids, here's the recent graduates. They are willing students, and we'll be there from April 15th to 24th, and they are going out from the Central European Training Center, and they're visiting. In fact, just 2 weeks ago, one of those students, right there. Oh, how do you like that? Stop. I shouldn't have done that. There we go. He passed out 200 Arabic testaments in a camp in Serbia. Because those people are behind barbed wire, waiting to go to the next camp. And they are willing to listen to about anything. And they handed out blankets wrapped, you know, around the New Testament, and they unwrapped the blanket and handed it to him and said, and this is why we're bringing you the blanket. And think about, would you bring a blanket to someone that invaded your country? Here's why we are. Isn't that amazing to think? They can do something none of us could ever do. And Bonnie and I get the privilege of going to them. There they are out in Budapest doing the street meetings, the Kelty station where you've seen all the pictures of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of refugees. This is what's streaming through Europe right now from Morocco, from Turkey, and from coming across from Turkey. Part two is in May, and the elders have approved for Calvary to fund the Arabic pastors and evangelists that are going to plant churches among the refugees. JETS is recalling every one of their graduates for a refresher course, an encouragement course, and to ride a bus from Sudan to Jordan and to stay in a hotel for the conference and to go back for each of these students is about $250, and they have about 200 that can come. It's $50,000 to have all 250 of them come back to Jordan and go home. And that's the project, and in fact, there are one deacon and two elders that are praying about going on this trip with me in May. So you should pray for them, especially for their wives, because they're hoping their husbands return. It's an Arab Pastors and Evangelists Encouragement Conference sponsored by JETS. And I just clipped this out of the New York Times. It says, Americans have lost $7.6 trillion since June of 2000 on bad investments that have gone bankrupt and like they've gotten 24 cents on the dollar. Whereas God's rate of return on treasure sent to heaven is 100-fold, Jesus said. That's 10,000%. That's good perspective. And we're going, oh, this guy is unbelievable. His name is Suhail, and he's actually one of my friends that I correspond with regularly. Do you know what his ministry is? He has a 6-foot card, portable table. And he folds it up and he carries it with a backpack, and he carries it to the street in front of the front doors of the mosque in his town, and he opens his table up and he takes all of his Arabic New Testaments and Arabic Jesus videos, and he lays them across the table, and he stands behind the table like this. When the mosque doors open, he said, they come out like a river of black ants, and he said, they come, and they part, and they go around his table, and he just stands there and smiles. He's been doing this, I've known him for 15 years. He said, and every week, every New Testament and Jesus video that he prayed over is taken. And he folds his table up with his empty backpack and he walks back home. And on all of them is his contact information. When I talked to him about 2 months ago, he said he was walking down the street when a car pulled up, the door opened, someone jumped out, grabbed him, pulled him inside and drove away. And he was thinking of texting his wife that I won't see you again. And it was a city official in his town that had the police come pick him up. They know where they are, and they track him. And they brought him into town, to the town hall, and brought him through the back stairway to this office of that person, shut the door, and the person said, why do you give out Jesus videos? And he told him. He said, why do you give out New Testaments? He told him. And then the man said, would you give those to me? He said, I can't walk up to your table. And I thought, would you put a card table in front of the Islamic Center and see what everybody does when they come walking out? Do we even think of doing that? Is that even on our radar? This is what these people are called to do. Unbelievable. Look at that guy. He's still smiling. This is the part of the group that we served last time because they had a reunion 10 years ago. This is what's coming to Europe. And the amazing implications for the gospel in the largest human migration since World War II is this, that we should pray for how to participate with what God is doing in the refugee crisis, and he's doing great things. You've been sitting so long, let's stand, and as you stand, I'm going to pray, and then after I pray, I'm going to introduce three new members, and we're going to induct them quickly so that we can stay on schedule for our business meeting in a few moments. So let's bow. Father, I thank you that what for many Americans is either frightening, thinking what'll happen if ISIS keeps coming, or maybe disturbing, that why are we spending so many millions of dollars over there when we have so many problems here? But for us who know you, we know that you are the God who is controlling what's going on around this world. And this unrest that is convulsing the world is displacing people in an unprecedented way so that they could be exposed to the gospel. And thank you for those who have sacrificed to be right in strategic places and are training 100 at a time to go out into these needy places and to spend the rest of their lives with the glorious gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ in your great salvation. And I pray that you would bless us as a church as we reach out through training the next generation of your servants in Sunday school, through watching them in the nursery, through supporting them in prayer, through supporting them in finances, through even supporting the streaming of our services, that people from China that got saved while attending Western and baptized in this church are sitting in Beijing watching our service because they don't know another believer out of 20 million people. How I pray that we will realize that we are in the fellowship of the gospel through what you are doing among us. And I pray that we would be strategic as we think about this migration of people that need Christ. In your precious name we pray. Amen.